ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसंस्तुतानि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. So we're in verse 54. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna uvacha, stita prajnasya ka bhasha, stita prajnasya ka bhasha, samadhistasya keshava, samadhistasya keshava, stita dhikim prabhasheta, stita dhikim prabhasheta, kimasita vrajetakim. Kimasita vrajetakim. Stita prajnasya ka bhasha. So stita prajnasya. Okay. Stita prajnasya ka bhasha. Samadhi stasya. Samadhi stasya keshava. Stita dihi kim. Prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta kim. Okay. So Arjuna says, now Arjuna is asking Krishna a question after the Lord has unfolded all of this Karma Yoga, the Karma Yoga Buddhi. And he's spent the first part of this chapter talking about Sankhya Yoga, just Vedanta, just the vision of the just the knowledge itself, and then the Karma Yoga, how to really be with this knowledge. Okay. So here, Arjuna now says, "Stita prajnasya, genitive singular, for stita prajna. Stita prajna means knowledge, the clarity, prajna, clear knowledge." The pra gives that sense of clarity. Nya means the cognition, the knowledge is there. So one who is has prajna means they have clarity of knowledge, doubt-free knowledge. So prajna, they have knowledge. The one who has knowledge, which is stitta, which is firm, it remains, it doesn't go away. Stitta means to stay, to remain, to be there. So stitta prajna means for the one who has jnana nishta, right, whose knowledge, that nishta, that sta, it's the same as stitta, okay? So one whose knowledge is firm, is steady, is free from doubt, doesn't wander, he has clarity. So for that stitta prajna, for the one whose knowledge is firm and doesn't go away, steady, ka bhasha, as Shankara says, ka bhasha can mean what is said, what does he say? That's not the meaning here. Ka bhasha. What is said? What do others say about this, the stitta prajna? What is said about him? So what is the bhasha? What is the what is it that is talked about when we're talking about the stitta prajna? How is he described? What is the description of the stitta prajna? And then this stitta prajna, who is samadhi stasya? That sta ending means samadhi. Like samadhi means one whose mind is staying with the self. With the buddhi, the mind stays with the self, right? Enjoys the self, is resolved in the self. Samadhi staha, the one who stays that way, who stays with the self, whose mind stays that way, or samadhi, stays with the self. So stitta prajna, the one whose knowledge is firm. Samadhi staha, the one who stays in samadhi. You have to understand what samadhi means. It means the mind, it's not in nirvikalpa samadhi where there's no world or no universe. That's not what's meant. It's the mind doesn't wander. The knowledge is firm and clear. There are no doubts. And so the mind sits with the self. That's the home base of the self. And the mind is never away from the self. In fact, in another Upanishads, I can't think of which one it is right now. Maybe in the details, anyway, I can't remember. This is what's said. If I think of the moon, I'm already there. If I think of the sun, I'm already there. Wherever my mind is, I am. And if that means whatever the cognition is, there I am. Whatever the perception is, there I am. Whatever the emotion is, there I am. Doesn't make any difference. Because there is no thought, there is no cognition, there's no perception, there is no experience that's apart from myself, that's away from myself. So I'm always the very being of the cognition, whatever that happens to be. And so the samadhi-staha, I would say that is the samadhi-staha. That's also the sthita-prajna. Because the knowledge is firm. That means I am the whole. There is nothing at all. There is no experience that's away from me. If that is recognized, whatever the cognition that is taking place, I am there. Right? Whatever the cognition that is taking place, that cognition is a gift to me, as Shankar says in a previous verse. That cognition is an offering to me. Right? It's not separate from me. So so now, Swamiji in his Bhasha talks about this. That Arjuna in this first line was able to use these words. Stitta prajna, it's Arjuna's word, right? Stitta prajna. And samadhi, Krishna used samadhi, but he says samadhi stitta. So for a person who is like this, you know, how do others speak of him? How is that person described? That's what Arjuna wants to know in this first section. So that now we've got two Keshavas names of us for Krishna. I forget the etymology of that. I'll look it up. So, stitta pregnasya genitive, bhasha, nominative, bhasha is nominative singular. So, ka bhasha, nominative singular, what is the bhasha? What is the description of a stitta pregna? Who is samadhi stasya? There's the sya again, the genitive again. Then, hey Keshava, my poor Krishna, addressing the Lord. Stitta dihi kim. Now he uses, instead of stitta prajnasya, he says stitta dihi. It means the same. One whose wisdom, one whose knowledge, one whose buddhi is stitta, is firm. It doesn't go away. It doesn't fluctuate. The knowledge is clear. It can't be thrown off by doubts or experience. So it's been recognized. Nothing can take, no experience, no amount of experience or logic can throw you off or take you away from that vision. So, nishta. So for the one who has this clarity, who has this firmness, nishta, kim prabhasheta. This is, prabhasheta is potential. And it's being used here like this. Kim prabhasheta. How does he talk? How does he speak? What does he say? How is he? How does he talk? That potential is how should he? How should he behave? It has definiteness. How does he behave? How should he behave? How should he be? How should we we'll see somebody like that walking along the street? Are there any markers in the way that they speak? Then, kim asita? How would he sit? How would he be if he were here? How would he be sitting? You know? Vrajeta kim. How would he move about? So, looking at this verse as a whole, with Arjuna having been exposed to these teachings and using such terms as stitta prajnasya and stitta dihi, you know, and samadhi staha, really using these terms to describe the wise person. We're not going to think that now all of a sudden Arjuna is kind of a dodo. You know, we're said dodo saying, well, gee, does he walk? Does he skip when he walks? Or, you know, does he only sit cross-legged? Or does he sit, you know, in real chairs? Or, it's not that. That's not what Arjuna is asking. He's saying, what are the markers? In a way, this is how Shankar deals with this. How should I be? What is the sadhana for me? How are they in the world? How does a wise person who has this knowledge, how do they engage in the world? You know, it's not just how do literally how do I sit or stand or speak or move about. It's how do I engage with others? How do I handle myself in the world? You know, and so now he's asking Krishna to talk about, you know, what is such a person? How does this knowledge affect the person in real life, in day-to-day life? So it's a beautiful question. So he's not just saying, how does he walk and talk and sit, literally, you know, but how does he engage in the world? And then, also in that question then, is how should I be in the world as I gain this knowledge? Because as Shankara deals with this, and Swamiji does too beautifully in his Bhasha, what are the attributes of a wise person? What is natural to them because they have nishta? The mind owns this knowledge. So there's no doubt in the mind. That is the reality for the person. And that being the reality, that person will behave, and if that knowledge has taken root, right, and kind of burned out all of the samskaras and all of the vagueness and all of the habitual ways of behaving, then isn't there a way that that person who has maturity in that knowledge would engage with the world? Could you describe that to me? Because then I can use that as my sadhana. That can be a value for me. That can be something that, as I gain this knowledge, and now I deal with my mind that has an emotional lag time, right, that has not understood, not all levels of my mind understand at the same time, not all levels of my unconscious understand at the same time, so there's an emotional lag time. So what is the value? What are the values with which to hold my mind and my behavior in the world? You know, what do I emulate, or how to be with, or what is the value system? That's a good way of saying it. What is the value system that my mind, that I hold for my mind? That Swamiji's often joked in this. You know, you can fake it till you make it. He likes that. He says, fake it till you make it. There's some truth in it, you know. There's truth in it. You fake it till you make it in this sense. You have a value for something. He, in his Bhasha, he uses the value of giving. Say you have a value for giving. Say you give to charity, for instance. You have a value for giving. But even though you have a value for giving, every time you go to give, another side will come up that's worried about your own security or what you could spend the money on for yourself, or they don't really deserve that money. Why, I need that money. No, I don't think that I'm going to give that money. I don't think so. So there's this thing going on, even though from your experience and from your own values, if you have a value for giving. Okay, so then, because you understand the value of giving and the effect that has on your antakaran, on your mind, every time that you go ahead and do give, you know, it actually is very, gives you a tremendous feeling of freedom. Right? You have that value, and so you bring that value to, that it's that value that then talks to the other side, right? Now, that other side, so that's the example he happens to use. So you can read that in his commentary. He uses some other things, too. You bring that value to deal with the other side that's saying, I don't want to give anything. I don't like to give. Or I don't want to do this, or I don't want to do that. Even though it goes, so you bring that value to the other side, and then that value actually allows you to do that particular action. So you're basically training the mind in a sense. Okay. So that's that fake it till you make it. And why does he say fake it till you make it kind of laughingly? Well, because you don't completely have that. You aren't, that value isn't absolutely natural to you. You know? At another point in your at another point of time, a certain value just becomes natural to you. That's just how you are. It's not, there's not a conflict around it. It's not a conflict with an old value. It's just natural to you. And so then it's not fake it till you make it. He uses the example as, when in that situation, that particular type of giving, I think he's talking about in India, there's different types of charities that are done. But that particular type of giving, for that person, that isn't natural to them, right? They're acquiring that particular value. So that value isn't natural, right? Whereas for somebody else, that value might be completely integrated and natural. So for them, it's not fake it till you make it. The other one is trying to own that, right? And so in that spirit, Arjuna is asking this question, you know, how does a jnani act? It's like saying, how will I act when I'm a jnani, when I really understand this knowledge, and what is the value system? Okay, and that's how Krishna takes this question, and he answers it in this way. Okay, so let's do the next verse where he starts doing it. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati Yada Kaman, Prajahati Yada Kaman, Sarvan Partha Manogatan, Sarvan Partha Manogatan, Atman Yevatmana Tushtaha, Atman Yevatmana Tushtaha, Stita Pregnas Tadurchate, Sita Pregnas Tadurchate, Prajahati Tada Kaman Sarvan Partha Manogatan Atmani Eva Atmana Tushtaha Stita Pregnaha Tada Uchate. So Bhagavan says, when a person, because there's no subject in the top line, okay, the subject comes down at the bottom line. So when a person, prajahati, gives up, abandons, lets go, prajahati yada, completely lets go, abandons. Yada means when, okay? Prajahati yada. So when a person lets go, abandons, kaman sarvan, accusative plural, raman, okay? Sarvan kaman. So when a person gives up, abandons all desires, sarva means all, kama. So sarvan kaman. When a person gives up all desires, hey Partha, hey Arjuna, all desires manogatan that have gone into the mind, that have entered the mind. Manas means the mind, gatan that are there, they've gone into the mind. So all of these desires that now, sarvan kaman, all of the desires that have gone into the mind, when a person gives up all of those, I'll tell you how that works, okay? When a person gives up all of those desires, then what? Atmani, in the self, locative singular from Atman, Atman and Atmani Eva, in the self alone, Atmana, instrumental singular, Atmana, by the self, in the self alone, by the self, so Atmani Eva Atmana, Tushtaha, satisfied, complete, happy. Tushtaha means to be satisfied. It's past passive participle from tush, right? So satisfied in the self, by the self, alone. Atmani eva atmana tushtaha. Stitta pragnaha tada uchate. Tada, then, right? Top line yada, when the person gives up all desires, tada, then he is called a stitta pragnaha, one whose knowledge is firm, right? Stitta pragnaha, nominative singular, tada uchate. He is called a sitta pragyaha, okay? When his knowledge is firm. So the whole thing is in this verse, in a sense. So let's take a look at it. You can't, in terms of knowledge, you can't say just give up all desires. So Like, say if you were to come to the teacher, the teacher says, give up all desires and you will be happy. And what, first of all, what does it mean? Give up all desires and you'll be happy. Does that mean that any desire that comes into your mind you shouldn't act upon? It's very confusing. Say just as a human being, you read this verse and it says, you know, give up all desires, just be with yourself. Then you'll be happy. Then you'll be a sthitaprajñaha. So now you think, okay, to be a sthitaprajñaha, to have clear knowledge, right, then I just have to give up all desires. So now, say if you have a desire for a glass of water. Say you have a desire to play some music. Say you have a desire to go to work. Say you have a desire to walk across the street. Say you have a desire to meet a friend. Every time this desire comes, should you abandon it, prajahati, give it up? See what I mean? Every move that you make is the result of a desire, right? So this isn't about not acting on your desires. It's the karma yoga attitude. It's where you act on a desire, but you give up the relationship with the desire, that the desire template, I have to have this so that I can be happy. That's the giving up of the desires. Because when you have that, when that's the case, you have in fact given up the desire as a desire is defined. As if we define a desire is, I need this in order to be happy. I want this so that I can be happy. That's the desire that we're talking about. So now what if the desire becomes what we call a dugdha bija? I want this, but I no longer have the second part, is so that I can be happy. In this sense, I want this, but I don't define my well-being. I don't define my well-being based on the fulfillment of the desire. Then we say that desire is no longer a desire in the same sense of the word. This is important to understand, because otherwise how can you live? How can you fulfill your prarabdha? How can you do anything? How can you be a person? What if you want to practice music? What if you want to play music? You know? What if you want to read a book? What if you want to be with friends? What if you want to be a normal person? You know? Is there anything in this verse that is saying, no, don't be a normal person? You know? It's not. As long as you have the prarabdha karma that's caused you to take this body, and you have sense organs and a mind, and you're going to be engaged in the world, you know? And so your mind is going to be engaged in the world, and the impetus for any action that you do is in the form of a desire, right? That's what impels you. So it is not about giving up the desire, but it is how you hold the desire. What is the desire template form for you? If it's the karma yoga buddhi, or jnana yoga, really, just for knowledge, you know, I am doing this because I want to, and at the same time, my ananda, my well-being, my happiness is not dependent on it. If the happiness is dependent on it, that's what you let go. The desires are coming all of the time in the mind. Even Swamiji says this in Tathagata. For a human being, jnani or not, desires are coming in the mind. They're harmless. Unless the desire grabs you in this form, I need this in order to be happy. We all know when that happens, right? You can want to do something, but if it doesn't work out, that's fine. That's a harmless desire. But if you want something or need something to be a particular way, all of a sudden there's stress, there's tension. Does everybody know what I'm talking about?
No.
Just checking. Okay. That's when you let go. That's what gets you let go immediately. That's what the mind gets into the habit of letting go. I want this. I'm going toward it. But I don't have the karma yoga buddhi is taking. You take it as you take what you get as prasad from the Lord. Right? That's that letting go. You know, and it doesn't mean letting go. See, this is the tricky thing to understand. It doesn't mean letting go of pursuing the object or trying to be successful in what you're doing. You know, it's not got to do with, that's not what you're letting go of. You're letting go of the need for the result to be in a particular way. And when that happens in your mind, you feel it. You feel it in your body, you feel it in your heart. That's what you let go of. And that becomes natural. To a jnani, it becomes so natural that you don't need to let go of it because you've already let go. See what I mean? For a mumukshu, or for a seeker, or for somebody who's developing in light of this knowledge, when the little clutch takes place, you let go. It's when the clutch takes place. It doesn't mean that you start pursuing the object, or you stop playing your music, or you stop doing whatever it is that you're going to do, or you stop, you know, trying to be successful, and whatever it is. It doesn't have to do with that. It has to do with the clutch that, you know, and then you say, oh, then you learn, then that's the practice, that's the sadhana. For a jnani, it's not a sadhana. And for a person as they're gaining nishtha, that practice becomes less and less and more, less and less frequent. Right? It becomes less and less frequent because there's less and less things that you need to let go of. Right? Less and less things that, as you kind of mature in your knowledge, it just becomes a natural way to be. But then there'll be one. And then there'll be one. So you let go. So here it says, when all of these commas, when all of them have been let go, means there's nothing more to let go. Because you pursue your desires or whatever the prarabdha presents to you, which is often in the form of desire, right? You pursue those things. And when they don't work out in the way that you want, then you either pursue it in another way, but you let go of, you move forward. You accept the results of the action and you move forward. Does everybody see? So for a person who's a mumukshu or maturing in that, you practice that. For a jnani, you don't have to practice it because it's already let go. As it's occurring, it's let go. Does everybody see? So you can see what is what we call siddha, or accomplished, natural, organic, natural, embodied for a jnani, becomes a value for somebody who's in this knowledge, for somebody who's gaining this knowledge. It becomes a practice. But it's a practice in the light of your knowledge. So now that's why he doesn't stop there. He doesn't say, just let go of your desires and all will be well. How can you do that? How does the jnani, why is the jnani, this one who has this sthita prajna, this one who's rooted, why is it they're able to do it, to do that? Because say you have the desire template, I want this to be happy, that means that still for you, your ananda, your happiness, is superimposed on that object or situation. That's the desire template. I want this so that I can be happy. What if for the knowledge, as you gain knowledge, as you're gaining knowledge now and maturing in this knowledge now, or as you're mature in this knowledge, what is the source of ananda? It's Atman. Is the self. There is no other source of ananda. It's not like there is an object that itself has ananda. The ananda that is there is the Atma. That's it. And the reason that we are fooled is that when we fulfill a desire, following the desire template, I want this so that I can be happy, when we fulfill a desire, the mind relaxes. And when a relaxed mind reflects the self, so that mind has then the experience of ananda. That's what it is, right? So say, as you become rooted in your knowledge, where does the buddhi seek its ananda, its sense of well-being? Only in the self. That's where the mind goes. The mind goes to the self naturally, for my fullness. So the mind sitting in myself enjoys myself, is satisfied, is full, has ananda through what? Through the self alone. So Atmani, the mind, this one who's stitta dihi, the one whose knowledge is firm, that one sits in the self, Atmani, in the self, Eva, alone. And Tushtaha, therefore, sitting in the self, that mind, rooted in the self, Tushtaha, is satisfied. How? By the self. Because what is the source of Ananda? Even for an Ajnani, who's fulfilling a desire, what is the source of the Ananda? It's not the object. It's the Atma. And so the thing is, the one whose knowledge is firm, stitta pregna, stittadi, the one whose knowledge is firm, where is that mind? No, I mean, no confusion anymore. It's clear. Where does that mind go for Ananda? To myself. And how far is that mind from myself? Because if I say go, the mind goes to the self. Is there a distance, you know? Is there a distance between myself and my mind? For the mind to have to travel anywhere? Say no. There's no distance. So what is meant there? My mind is not asking the world anymore to fulfill me. I don't need the world in order to give me Ananda, because I've discovered that the world has never given me Ananda or anybody else, ever at any time. But that isn't what is actually happening. What is actually happening is that when my mind is relaxed, then that mind reflects the Ananda of my own being. And my own being is its own. This is what we call Swarupananda. The Atma itself is complete and whole, as you are, just your being. That is its own beautiful, has its own very beautiful nature. Just you, the me, your own presence. And the mind is satisfied with that presence. The mind revels in that presence. So that is its source of Ananda. When that is its source of Ananda to itself, and nothing is confusing it about that, so that is its source of Ananda, then the mind is relaxed. Completely. Much more relaxed than it is trying to manipulate the world to make me happy. And the reason it's more relaxed, like night and day actually, is because nobody can take myself away from me. It's not like any object in the world, any situation, any relationship, it doesn't make any difference what it is. It's finite. It's changing. Just in our interpersonal relationships, now they're good, now they're bad. And now they're good again. They're good and they're bad, and they're good and they're bad. They're good and they're bad, and they're better. They're worse and they're worse, and they're good and they're bad. And that's the world. Right? That's the world. It's always changing. We can't make it stop. The mind is not stupid. The mind knows this. And because the mind knows this, there's always stress. It's always an underlying stress, even in your pleasurable moments. Because you know everything is changing. You know, so you can only kind of steal this moment. This moment is good for right now. It's just, you know, hang on to it for as long as it can last. But that has pressure in it. The Atma never moves. It is not ever, doesn't ever fluctuate. It's not going to leave. It's not going to change. Your mind can change and say, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to get out of this situation. I'm going to leave you. I can do that. You know? In fact, I could even kill myself and leave this body. I could do all kinds of things. I can leave. You know? Then I have to be afraid of myself. My God, what if I leave? Well, you might leave me, but I might leave you. Then where would I be? Then where would I be? Right? So the person can create hell for me, but I can also create hell for me also. I can create hell for me, I can create hell for you, and creating hell for you, I can create hell for me. And it's true not just with people, it's true just with all situations. Now look at with yourself, the relationship of your mind with yourself. No matter where your mind goes, you are there. The Atma is there. So now your mind can relax in this regard also. Your mind, as wild as it may be, as crazy as it may be, as unhappy as it may be, as deluded as it may be, as whatever that it may be, It cannot be.
Yes.
And as bad as you may be, as nasty as you may be, as terrible as you may be, as disappointing as you may be, yourself will never leave you. You can't leave it. It can't leave you. And it is the source of Ananda. So no matter what you do, no matter whatever happens in your mind, whatever the state is, whatever the emotional state is, whatever the problem is, you can actually turn it on a dime. Right? Because the mind isn't physical. The mind is subtle. The mind is subtle. You know, like, I can ask you right now to imagine a huge monster. Let me say it like this. I'll make it more real for you. Imagine biting into a lemon. That gives you an experience, doesn't it? Gives you the experience of a lemon, right? But now if I ask you to smell a rose, then you can do that. It's a different experience. Now the lemon experience isn't there. Now you're imagining smelling a rose. Now see, if I say, imagine yourself walking in a beautiful meadow. You're walking down a beautiful meadow and the sky is it's warm out and the sky is clear. You know? And now I say, and now imagine an incredible storm coming in and showering water upon you. Right? So now you're imagining that. Imagine yourself with your partner and having just the most beautiful relationship at this moment. Maybe you're taking a walk together or whatever. And now remember your last fight. Okay? Your mind is flexible, right? It can go from sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. It's not as though, you know, you're growing a plant or something. You know, it's immediate. You go from sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. Say you're having even. I think is something. This is all kaushalam. These are skills to learn. Kaushalam has to do with skills, learning how to be with the mind. Say, for instance, you're having psychological unconscious stuff coming up, complexes that you call them, problems that are causing pain in the psyche. Causing pain. Now you are overwhelmed in pain, so you're sitting there overwhelmed in pain. Okay? That's a state of mind. It's an affect. It's what we call an affect. Now the mind is having that experience. Now say you have learned how to be with that mind, how to be with that affect. You've learned how to talk to it. You've learned how to be kind with it. You've learned how to gain some distance with it. I'm talking now just in duality, how to be inside the mind with this affect and how to listen, how to be with it. And then you watch that affect dissipate and disappear through the way that you are with it, right? So this isn't, the mind is not concrete. See what I mean? It can turn on a dime. It can go from dukkha in the deepest feelings of sorrow to sukha if you know the trick, if you know the tricks of how to be with it, right? And so now here, look at this situation. For the jnani, for the one who is mature in their knowledge and has, you know, had time to work through all of these, let me put it this way, has had the time to enlighten all of the different parts of my mind, all of the different complexes, all of the children inside, all of the parts that are still hurting. Say now all of those have come aboard in time, because I've spent time with them. Because I've tended the garden of my unconscious. I've spent that time, you know, to bring everybody on board, to teach them to be patient, to let them learn, you know. So now that mind doesn't any longer need. It can, because of the prarabdha karma, it will still have desires, because that's what will take you through your life. But there's nothing in the mind that says, I need this to be happy. It says something much different. It is happy because it is with the source of happiness. It's sitting with the source of happiness. That's the Jivanmukta. It's already sitting there with the source of happiness, and from that vantage point, it's enjoying the world. Now say, for a seeker, it understands, you know this, You understand it. You get it. And part of the time, that's how your mind's behaving. And part of the time, it's not behaving like that. Part of the time it is, part of the time it's not. But at some point, all of the time, you know it. You know it, but you're not your mind's not behaving that way. So then what do you do? What do you do? You just bring your mind back. You bring your mind back with what you know. How do you bring it back? How do you bring it back? Part of it is that karma yoga buddhi. Part of it is you bring it back in a way that you would teach a child. You bring your back, what I mean by that, in a way that you would teach a child that you love. The way that you would teach a child that you love, I have to add that. You know? You bring it back with love. It's very simple. You bring the mind back with love. Because you understand. You know? You know, you yourself, your buddhi knows. But this part of the mind doesn't know. And so, now, your buddhi, the one that knows, is now with this part that doesn't know. And brings it back. The part of you that knows brings back the part that doesn't know. Right? That's why, you know, when Krishna spent all of this time teaching the prasada buddhi, you know, this prasada buddhi, where everything I take is prasad, and kaushalam, it's two. The prasada buddhi is the summit form, where if I take everything as prasad from the Lord, in that way I'm seeing all of the things I like and the things that I don't like, that's what they, all of them have in common. Samatva means they have in common. Sameness. They have sameness. What is the sameness? All of it is prasad from Ishwara. That's what's the same. What is not the same? Well, this isn't how I wanted this situation to turn out, and this is how I wanted this situation to turn out, and I wouldn't have chosen this. But I take all of it as prasad. And since that's the underlying attitude for all of it, then my mind behaves toward these results as my mind behaves toward prasad. You see how that is? Even though there's maybe I don't like the result or I do like the result, the way that my mind behaves toward it is toward prasad. That's the prasada buddhi. Okay. The kaushalam, which is the second part of this karma yoga buddhi, is skill that I understand how to be with my mind. I understand these values. Even how to treat the mind, how to be with the unconscious. This is all kaushalam, you know. This is all of the skills. This is how we learn. Understanding dharma, having a value for dharma. Understanding ahimsa means non-injury, means having a value for that. Where we understand these things and we know why they are important. And so because we understand them and we know why they are important, we have a value for them, and so therefore we have a skill in reference to that situation. The skill, it's knowledge-based skill. You see how that works? And so now, for the jnani, if the mind just naturally abides in myself, the seeker is the one who knows why my mind should just abide in myself. It knows the whole thing. It knows why my mind should be abiding in myself, number one, because I'm the source of ananda, it knows it clearly. And number two, it knows and understands why my mind is not behaving that way. Right? I understand why it should be behaving that way, and I understand why it is not behaving that way, and the kaushalam is, I understand what to do about that. I understand how to be with that mind that is not behaving that way. Right? So that I can bring the mind back. So that's knowledge. Right? It's knowledge. It's knowledge on a practical level, and it's knowledge in terms just of the reality of your own being. So with that, so notice here, he has both parts, so it's complete. So Krishna says, when a person, yada prajahati, when a person gives up, abandons, kaman sarvan, all desires that are coming into the mind, manogatan, right? Means what? Abandons them means this idea that I need it to be this way in order to be happy. That's what's abandoned, right? So when they give up that aspect of the desire, that it has to be this way in order for me to be whole and complete, when all of that is naturally abandoned for all desires, not just some of them, all of them, then how is that? Atmani eva atmana tushtaha. Being satisfied doing that, because being satisfied in the self by the self alone. When that is the case, then that person is a stitta pragna. Everybody see? So that's the truth of it.
What is he again?
Stitta pragna means one whose knowledge is firm. Pragna means they have clarity of knowledge without any doubt. Stittaha, and having that clarity of knowledge, the mind, that knowledge stays. It doesn't go away anymore. It just abides there, it stays. That's jnana nishta, right? So that's jnana nishta. Let's go to the next one.
What number?
56. Sukeshu vigataspraha.
Sukeshu vigataspraha.
Vitaraga payakrodaha.
Vitaraga payakrodaha.
Stitadhir muniruchate.
Stitadhir muniruchate.
Let's do the Sunday, would make it better. Dukeshu anudvigna manaha. Anudvigna manaha. Dukeshu anudvigna manaha. Sukeshu vigata spraha. Vigata spraha. Vita raga bhaya krodaha. Stitabihi munihi uchate. Dukeshu, regarding in reference to dukkha, events that cause pain. Sukha dukkha, pleasure pain. So in regards to dukkha, locative plural, dukeshu, to dukkha. So regarding dukkhas, the one who is anudvigna manaha, the one whose mind is not afflicted. We'll tell you what this means in a minute. So in painful situations, the one whose mind is not afflicted remains unafflicted. And then sukeshu, in pleasurable situations, vigata spriha, the one who does not have attachment or longing, vigata is gone. Vigata means it's gone. Spriha means attachment, okay? Longing, wanting it to continue. So vigata spriha, the one who's free from that attachment. And then, vita raga bhaya krodaha. The one who is vita, it's gone. Vita. It has gone. Past passive participle. What has? Raga, desire, bhaya, fear, krodha, anger. The one who's free from desire, bhaya, fear, and krodha, anger. Stittadihi munihi uchate. That muni, that wise person, uchate, is called stittadihi. Stittadihi and munihi are nominative singulars. That Muni, that wise person, that sage, Uchite, is called a Stitadihi, one whose knowledge is firm, Jnana Nishta. All of these are for Jnana Nishta. No doubt, freedom from doubt. The knowledge doesn't leave, right? It just abides there, steady. So that wise person, that Muni, is called a Stitadihi. So now, what does it mean? If the body is in pain, for instance, dukkha, there's different types of dukkha. Say you have physical, there's pain. There's pain and there's sorrow from the body. There's pain or sorrow from others in the world. There's pain and sorrow from natural disasters, for things like this. That's when we say that adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika, all of these, we say shanti, shanti, shanti to try to ward off all of these types of dukkhas. Right. So now, to say the person does not become agitated by the dukkha is not to say that the person doesn't experience pain. It's just there's not a buildup on the pain. So it's poor jnani. If there's, say you're in physical pain, there's dukkha there. There's sorrow there. So the sorrow is experienced. And it's not like you want the sorrow or that you want the pain or that you want the suffering. Or your house burns down, that's not a pleasurable experience, or your partner leaves you, or what all of these things that happen in the world that are meant to cause pain. Your partner leaves you, your child dies, all of these things that can happen. They're all sources of pain. So you experience the pain. Somebody close to you, a loved one dies, or a pet dies, all of these things, these are all sources of pain. It's not that the pain doesn't occur. The pain occurs. But how are you with the pain? How do you hold the pain? Do you build up on the pain so that the pain now becomes in a nest, becomes held in a web of more pain, right? So you have pain, and then to this pain you add more and more pain, right? By your own thinking. Your thinking, the way that you hold the pain, is not causing you pain. Pain is causing you pain, but not the way that you are with the pain. Do you understand the difference? It's a huge difference. Like if I were to become sick, then the sickness is causing me pain. But then my bitterness or resentment over the sickness is causing me more pain. That's pain upon pain. Or my jealousy or resentment of the others who are not in pain. You have money and I don't have money. And I'm suffering because I don't have money. Because it creates difficulties in my life. It does create difficulties. For it depends on your situation. If you're a sannyasi in India and you don't have any money, well, that's fine. It's all namaste. And it's fine to beg for the money. It's fine to, be walking around and just sit on the Ganga because you can sit on the Ganga by the Ganga and you don't have to own the land. Of course, that's all changing. But now, say, Swamiji will joke about all of this. Say you're a sannyasi here in this country, and you're wearing the orange and all, and you just go and sit under a tree somewhere. You put your little begging bowl there and you sit under a tree. Well, they'll let you do that from 8 to 5, You can sit under that tree from 8 to 5, or 8 to 8, I guess it is. But after 8 to 10, but after 10, boy, you'd better be hiding somewhere. So Swamiji, old joke, he said, I would be, in this country, I would be a holy hobo. Right? A holy hobo. Sought after by the police and sneered at by others. Right? So that would be a painful situation. It's a painful situation. But then, how am I with that painful situation? That's the thing. I lose my job. That's a painful situation. And I have to have the stress, I can have or I cannot have also. Just look at, you lose your job, So now you have to find another job. Now you don't know where your next meal is going to come from. You don't know how long that money is going to last. And so now it's no longer simple. It's no longer cozy. You can't just kind of go from day to day and get your check. Of course, we all know that in the back of the mind. We all know in the back of our mind that if you do have a job, you cannot have it tomorrow. If you do have money in the bank now, you may not have it tomorrow. We all know this, but we can be in denial. You know, we can live in denial. But when you actually lose your job, you know, and you know that you only have enough money in the bank for 2 months, or 1 month, or 1 week, then you can't be in denial, right? And so now the question, that's dukkha. That's the creation has given you your little share of dukkha. Yeah. Because if you have this body, if you have this life, it's going to be the creation itself will make sure that you get some good events and some bad events. Balance it out. And the bad events, what are the bad events? They are designed to give you dukkha. That's what we mean by it. When you take this birth, 50% punya, 50% papa, the papa is designed to make you uncomfortable. The punya is designed to make you comfortable, happy. Right? So that's what this loka is all about, as it says traditionally, right, in India. That's what this particular bhuloka, human loka, is about. So now, it is about that for the ajnani, because the ajnani is totally dependent upon this world to make me happy. And so if the situation is designed to make me unhappy, it very well may. It very well may. Now look. It may make the jnani unhappy also, in the sense that the situation is meant to cause discomfort. You know, if you lose your job, it's not as comfortable as it was yesterday. If you become physically ill, it's not, your body is not as comfortable as it was yesterday, right? If you make a bad move in the stock market and lose all the money that you have, definitely not as comfortable as it was yesterday. That's life. But how are you with that uncomfortable situation? How are you? How are you with that dukkha? Who are you? How do you hold it? That is the difference. And so here in this verse, the jnani, the mind, is resting in the self, and the mind that is resting in the self is holding the dukkha. And that mind is not agitated. That unudvignaha means unagitated. It's not agitated by it. That doesn't mean that it's not experiencing it. See the difference? Sometimes we think about somebody who has self-knowledge, that they don't experience the ups and downs of the world. That's not true. You experience your prarabdha. You know, and there are very painful occurrences that can happen. But then how do you hold that painful occurrence? That's the thing. And now, on the other side, how do you hold the happy, the sukha, because it's not just pain. You get your share of sukha also. How do you hold the sukha? So now happy experience is coming. It's wonderful. Couldn't be better. How do you hold that? Oh my God, it's going to leave. Or this is, how long can we make this last? So, no. That's that, what Krishna says here, vigata spriha. That attachment, that hanging on, isn't there. Vigata. It's not there. Right? Because why? Because from the previous verse, that sarvan kaman, all those desires that enter the mind, you let them go. You're having a pleasurable experience. You're enjoying that pleasure. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. But now if the thought comes in, the clutch comes in, right? Now I have to protect this. Now the first little piece of dukkha has entered, right? The dukkha has entered right there. And there, so you get the little pinprick. So what do? You let go. You let it go. That's what the seeker does. You let go as soon as you get that pinprick. What is it for a jnani? Those moments of joy resolve into the self. That's why I give this as a guided meditation, and it's such a beautiful meditation just to follow, just to get into the habit of practicing. When you have a good situation or a moment of joy or a moment of happiness, whatever brings it about, whether it's being in nature or being whatever, whatever brings it about, it's a good time for meditation. Just at that time, instead of going outward, your mind is already at such peace, then just go to your being. And your mind gets used to that. In moments of joy, then you just, the joy actually increases. Because the mind just naturally goes to the anand of the self. Even if you're going out because of Ishvara, even if in the moment of joy you're going out into Ishvara. You're going out, so the mind is resolving into Ishvara, the mind is resolving into Ishvara. So there's no clinging at all. There's just an appreciation of Ishvara, there's appreciation of the creation. And so that's the attitude that a jnani has. And so with that, that being so, where is their anger? Where is their room for the raga? Raga means I want this so that I can be happy. Raga goes together with dvesha. They come together. Raga and dvesha. Raga is the positive. I love this. I want this so that I can be happy. Dvesha is I hate this. I need to get rid of it so that I can be happy. Both the same. Right, you can say raga dvesha, but it's both the same. I'm relating to this object in a way so that I can be happy, whether it's getting rid of it or getting it. It's the same thing, right? So where is the I need this in order to be happy? Where's the raga? The raga isn't there. The raga is toward the atma. That's really the raga because that's the source of the ananda. So the raga is turned toward the atma, not to the body or the mind, the sense organs, toward Brahman, toward the atma. When that's the case, where's the bhaya? Where's the fear? I could lose this. Somebody could take it away from me. You're going to take this away from me. The instant I feel that you're going to take that away from me, I have to let go. That's where you let go. Because that means that you have all of a sudden superimposed your ananda onto the world. Because nothing can take the self away from you. It's not possible. You are the self, and the mind can't get away from it. Nothing can take it away. So the instant you feel, that's the sudden to let go right there. Right? So where, in terms of the atma, in terms of your ananda, your wholeness, where is going to be the fear? The bhaya, that bhaya means, so the bhaya comes from ignorance. It means I've superimposed ananda onto something that can be taken away. Something that can change, a condition, a changing condition, just the nature of the world. So I let go of that. Krodha, anger. What's the source of the anger? I am angry at Ishvara because Ishvara is taking my ananda away from me. Even Ishvara can't take my ananda away because the self is changeless. Even Ishvara can't get rid of Atma. So Ishvara can't take the self away. How can can't take the ananda away? You can't take it away. Why we hate people or get angry or violent is because at ourselves, violent at ourselves, wanting to kill ourselves, violent and hateful toward our own being, toward our means toward our mind, hateful toward our mind or violent toward our mind or toward our body or toward others is why. Because I'm not happy. And I blame you for it. Yeah. Or I blame myself for it. I blame the world for it. I blame Ishvara for it. What? That's why I have to, okay, let go. It's time to let go. Time to bring my mind back to what the real source of ananda is. Let go means I let go in light of my knowledge. Okay, let me let go there. Let me recollect myself. Let me remember what is the source of the ananda. What is the source of my fullness? Do I really need the situation to be in this way for me to be whole and complete? So I just have to bring myself back. For one who knows, who has here, what's worth, is he using that? Stittadehi. The one who has jnana nishtha, they don't have to remember this because they already know it. Every part of the mind knows it. So until every part of the mind knows it, in the unconscious, there's parts that don't. That's how it is. There's nothing wrong with us or with anyone that parts of the mind know and parts of the mind don't know. Parts of the buddhi are very clear. or the buddhi becomes very clear, but the unconscious still has is childlike in parts. That's it. That's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you were to say, how could you be like that, talking to yourself? How could you be so childish? You know, how could you get so unhappy? Well, because that's how it is. Because that's what's normal. That's what's normal. That's why that part has to be then brought along, just like a child. You would never say that to your child, you know? How come you can't get up and walk? How come you're only taking 3 steps? How come you haven't spoken 10 words instead of 2, you know? How come you're crying because you're not getting your way? We want to think like that. Of course you're crying, you're mad because you're not getting your way. So we have to teach, right? Well, it's the same for all of the parts in you. Of course you're crying and angry because you're not getting your way. You know? But now we have something else to show those parts, to help. Your buddhi has a lot more wisdom, right? Because your buddhi has knowledge now. And so you can bring those parts up completely. Right? You can bring all of the parts of yourself up completely into knowledge. You have to be willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes love and kindness. You know? And even love and kindness toward those parts of you that aren't loving and kind. Why aren't they loving and kind? Because they're angry. Why are they angry? Because they were abused.
Yeah.
Why should they be angry just because they were abused? Well, because when you're abused, you don't feel loved. And when you don't feel loved, you're furious. And all you want to do is strike out or find a way to become loved. That's what it's all about. It's how the world works. And so say the parts of you that were not loved or were abused in this way. We've all been abused in different ways. And so those parts are hurt and angry. Yeah. And so what are the hurt parts and angry parts need? To be abused more? No, because if you abuse them more, they become more hurt and more angry and more split off. What do they need? There's only one thing, and that's understanding. Understanding is another word for love. That's what they need. Nothing else works. Because everything else just contributes to the problem and makes it worse. That's Kaohsiung. These kind of understandings is what we call the Kaohsiung. That's the skill. You know? Learning these skills, learning how to help your mind mature, that's a skill. It's an important skill. It's very much part of this knowledge. So here he says, let's look at this verse. So now he's talking for the Jivanmukta, right? The Stittadihi, the one who has knowledge. That Muni, that wise person, is called one who has Jnananishta, right? Has rooted in their knowledge, whose mind doesn't get upset in painful situations, and who doesn't cling to happy situations. That's simple as that. Doesn't get agitated in painful situations. It's not building up on it. It's not clinging to make happy situations go on, because they won't. Right? That's not how it is. That's not how creation is. And that person is free from raga dvesha and fear, bhaya, and krodha, anger. Because there's no reason for it. It's not being evoked. You have to have a reason to get angry. Right? You have to have a reason to have fear. If the reason is not there, right, then that is not going to come up. So for that person, those things are not there. Or if they are there, they're like birth seeds in business. Right? That person's called a stittadihi. Let's just take a minute. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.